Backless, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Very good day to you, and I'm so glad you're here and listening. Thank you so much for joining me. We're going to talk about some fun food things today, and you know me, I love talking about food, and we're going to be talking about some really good food today. The good news and the bad news, but I think it'll all end with some really good news, okay? So let's get started. I want to bring on my first guest, Simon Lester. He is an entrepreneurial CEO and strategist who focuses on consumer-facing industries and investment opportunities. He founded Pascha Organic Chocolate, born from a desire to create the simplest, purest, and most delicious chocolate without any of the additives or ingredients that might trigger allergic reactions for those with food allergies or intolerances. Hello, Simon.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
And you're ready to go? You're back from the big food expo out west?
Back from the big food expo out west. We've been talking solidly for the last 3 or 4 days, so excuse me if my voice is a little tired, but that's the game.
Okay, no problem. So let's just get up to date on why you founded Pascha Chocolate, because it's an important story.
Well, my background was in chocolate years ago. It's the very first job I had coming out of university in England. And it never really struck me at the time, but I'll never forget my first. I worked for a company called Cadbury, which is a big British chocolate company that became part of Kraft. I'll never forget my first week in that company. We were sort of supposed to learn the ropes of the chocolate business. So the first thing we did was we were sent to the milk processing facility. And you go from there into the chocolate plant, and you walk in, and you see bags of nuts, and you smell the milk. And you just assume that that is normal. And then years later, you know, you come back to thinking about chocolate. And I discovered that I had various food allergies, in particular to certain nuts and to milk. And then one of my daughters had a very severe food allergy. She's anaphylactic to shellfish. Mm. And it was the realization that struck us that it's not a big exposure you need to cause a problem. It's a tiny exposure. And sometimes it's not even consuming it. It's simply, you know, being near it or breathing something that you're allergic to that causes a problem. Once we realized that with my daughter in particular, the penny dropped in relation to chocolate. And I thought back to my original Cadbury experience when, you know, any of these chocolate plants you walk into, they are full of these allergens, these things that actually, you know, for some people make the chocolate taste nice, but for other people they're poisonous. And the whole problem in chocolate, in particular in chocolate, is you can't get rid of them within your production process. You know, once mm-hmm. the is there, it's there. Once the nuts have been down the line, you get little bits of residue that stays. And we just thought somebody needed to make ultra clean, ultra pure chocolate that was safe for anybody who can't have the milk and the nuts. And that's what we tried to do.
Well, I'm glad that you're out there, because the more I dig in and learn about chocolate, the scarier it gets. And we're going to touch on some of those scary things. But chocolate itself is a very simple thing coming from the cocoa plant. I've seen some of these fruits when I travel to Costa Rica, and the way I think we should be eating it is practically pure without all of these other things added to it. And what so many people don't realize, when we don't have allergies, if we read the label and if we read the statement that a food has been processed on equipment that has been processed with other allergens, most of us don't realize that if we do have a serious allergy, that means you can't touch those foods.
Correct. It's a fundamental point. In fact, I think it was the Canadian government that did a study. They measured, I forget how many bars, but a whole load of candy bars that had that statement on the back, may contain traces of or made in a facility that also processes. And they said, well, I wonder, you know, what sort of percentage of that bar is made up of these undisclosed allergens. And it's actually extraordinary. It's not nothing. It's sort of 0.5% of the bar or 1/3% of the weight of the bar.
It's significant.
Very, very significant. I actually was talking to another chocolate maker a couple of months ago, and they make a product that they call 99% cocoa. And the ingredients, and there's nothing else that's declared. So I said, well, what's the other ingredient? I said, well, we don't know. It's whatever else we picked up from the line, from residual production. And that's the point. They couldn't call it 100% because it's not, and you don't know what else is in there.
Well, I'd like to see that Canadian study on the chocolates. You're probably aware of a recent FDA study where they looked at, I believe, 100 chocolates, and many of them claimed they were dairy-free in a variety of different ways. Either they said they were completely free of dairy, or they said they contained no trace of dairy, and there were different levels. But most of them, whether they said they had it or didn't have it, did have significant amount of dairy. And for someone who's allergic, that's terrible.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, back in my early chocolate days, back in England, our standard dark chocolate contained milk as a declared ingredient. Of course, nobody ever reads the back of it. Mm-hmm. Didn't in those days. But dark chocolate simply meant it was a darker form of milk chocolate. So all those products have milk and stuff. But then there are all the others that don't even have it as an ingredient, but do pick it up as a residual component from, you know, prior production down that same production line.
Now, I'm a vegan, and I look for foods that don't contain animal products, and that includes milk. And I've been purchasing dark chocolates for a long time that don't list milk on the label. And I made a concession up until recently that's if a chocolate was processed on dairy equipment, I said that must be okay because it's probably so insignificant, and this will allow vegan chocolate companies that are making non-dairy chocolates, that'll allow them to grow and build because they have to originally lease some equipment. But I'm kind of horrified to discover that I probably have consumed a certain amount of dairy unknowingly.
You have, unfortunately, and it's really it's endemic within the chocolate production process, and if you've ever mess around with chocolate in your kitchen, you'll you know realize that many food products, you can clean your production line with water. You can sort of flush them down after a production run. But chocolate and water don't mix. So you can't clean the line with chocolate, with water. And you certainly don't want to go clean it with chemicals. So it's a bit of a problem. So what do you do? Well, really, you just scrape away all bits of chocolate. And that's as much as you can do to clean it.
Okay, so tell me about Pascha Chocolate. Did you purchase all new equipment?
We've done two things. Firstly, we went, having had this idea to get this business going and to create this pure chocolate, my first thought was, well, there has to be somebody out there making it or able to make it. So I went all through the UK, Ireland, Europe, Switzerland. I went all through Canada, where we're based. I went all through the U.S., and I couldn't find a single facility that was clean enough to make it. And it was quite an eye-opener when, you know, company after company said, well, you know, we don't use this, but we use that, or we use this, but we'll try and clean the line for you. And it's like it just didn't work. So in the end, we went down to Latin America, which is very interesting because I'm firstly – it's where, you know, many of the finer tasting cocoa beans come from. But secondly, within their diet, it's just not so normal to consume milk. It's not a dairy-based eating culture that they have. They don't systematically drink milk or cook with milk the way that we do in North America. And that was interesting because it allowed me to find two or three different companies that were able to put together a production plan that was clean enough for us. It was a clean facility where they never touched these things. The problem then was that the chocolate just didn't taste very good. They were clean, but they didn't know how to make great tasting products. And that's when I just got some of my old Cadbury buddies who were sort of kicking around in Toronto, and we just basically re-engineered the recipe. And in the early days, we just took that recipe, took it down to Ecuador and to Peru, and we got that made up for us in a clean facility, which I've been down and checked out. And actually, it's extraordinary the detail these guys, the attention these guys pay to the cleanliness of their production systems. As an example, every person who comes into that factory to work on the production floor, they walk in and they have to completely change all the clothing into this, you know, fresh, clean production clothing. So there's no risk that, you know, somebody's got a peanut butter sandwich stuck in the back pocket of their jeans or, you know, whatever else it might be that we'd be troubled by. So terribly, terribly clean down there. So that's what we did in the beginning. But as we've developed beyond that, we've actually just purchased a whole load of brand new production equipment, which we're putting into a facility in the U.S. In fact, it arrived literally last week. It opens up in a couple of weeks' time. So that's a very exciting development for us, and it will be the cleanest chocolate production facility in America.
And probably in the world.
Probably in the world, actually. it's scary stuff to
think
about, you know, managing and controlling. But it will be ultra, ultra clean. We're just fastidious. It's the only way.
Well, I'm very excited to find out about you because I've been looking at so many different brands of chocolate. And other than allergens, and we may get back to that subject if we have some time, there are other issues that are coming out about chocolate. One of them is using child slaves to harvest cocoa.
Yes.
And fortunately, according to the Food Empowerment Project, which lists chocolate and investigates where chocolates are sourced, you get an A rating where you don't source from places that have child slave labor.
Well, that's good to know. The real problem, the chocolate world is much like the coffee world, in that there are really kind of two standards of being. Just like in coffee, you've got Robusta and Arabica, and the beautiful aromatic coffees are made with the Arabica beans, and then the, you know, the kind of the coarse general beans are made with this Robusta coffee. Well, so in chocolate, you've got coarse, dense beans that predominantly come from West Africa, places like Ghana, the Ivory Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And they produce, you know, a vast percentage of the world's cocoa beans. I don't know what the number is, but it's a very large percentage. And those are the areas that for many reasons are associated with this sort of child, you know, slave labor culture. And it's not to do with, you know, the big nasty chocolate companies. Maybe they haven't done as much as they could or should have done to oppose it. But I think it is, it's a much more complex problem than that, that's somewhat systematic within the environment in which those beans are grown. So it's unfortunately somewhat coincidental that most of the cocoa beans come from these regions where that child slave labor culture is allowed to exist. It doesn't mean that a company like, you know, Hershey or Mars is causing that problem. They just inevitably have to use those beans. I'm sure they would much rather take, you know, beans that are processed in more favorable environments, and they're all making huge efforts to do that. You know, because we don't source from those regions, we source from Latin America, where it's a different culture, it's a different process, and it's much more family based. You see a lot of very, very small, you know, family plantations that are growing these cocoa beans. And I laugh, you know, you read some of these little chocolate companies that talk about the fact that they're buying, you know, buying directly from the farmers. Well, I really don't understand how they're doing that, because most of these farmers are just tiny, you know, 4 or 5 acres or so of cocoa trees that they're just sort of harvesting, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. And that's how they're sort of eking out a living. But it's all the family together, you know. Father, the kids. It's not slave labor at all. It's great they've got the opportunity to actually make that living and provide those, you know, the beans into the marketplace.
Right.
So that's how we work out there. And we work through fair trade. All our chocolate is fair trade. And, you know, we go down there, we visit the plantations, we visit the some of the farmers. We visit the co-op people, and you know, who knows? You make a visit twice a year. Do you see everything? You know, probably not. But to the best of our knowledge, the practices there seem pretty good.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, the other thing that's been coming out about chocolate, and I don't know if you know with regards to your own chocolate how it fares, but there's been concern about cadmium and lead in chocolate.
Well, there is concern, and it's a complex area. Cadmium and lead, more so cadmium, less so lead, are, you know, naturally occurring metals. They can be naturally occurring metals. They can also be non-naturally occurring metals. So, you know, you find the highest concentrations in areas where there is, you know, metal pollution from, you know, gas fumes or whatever else. But as naturally occurring metals, you find those ingredients in, or those metals everywhere. So potatoes or green leafy vegetables will contain these because they absorb them through the soil. So the soil content plays a big part in determining the amount of that metal that might get into the plant. It's not the only thing. There are farming practices. Do they use fertilizer? Do they not use fertilizer? What's the microclimate in terms of the way, you know, rainfall occurs and the way it leaches, you know, different metals and stuff through the soil. There are many, many, many factors. All we can do as chocolate makers, as we do, is measure, you know, measure the content of these metals, watch them, monitor them, and then make sure we design our products in a way that, you know, minimizes the likely occurrence. Even though we do that, the biggest factor is really about the amount of chocolate that people consume. As long as, you know, people are consuming what I might call a reasonable amount, and they're not sort of, you know, wolfing down, you know, bar after bar, they're not going to put themselves in a position with any chocolate that I've seen, where there's any danger of getting over the, you know, the World Health limits or the European limits or the FDA limits. So it's something that can become a motive, but I don't think it's, you know, for the vast majority of people eating, you know, a reasonable, sensible quantity, I don't think that's a real worry factor at this point in time. But it's something that is sort of...
Are you aware of the As You Sow recent study on chocolates? And they discovered so many different brands of chocolate that had levels that they considered, at least according to California's, I'm looking for exactly the wording I had for it. Are you familiar with that organization and their recent study?
I read a headline about it a month or two back. I have not seen the study, I must admit.
They said that 26 of the chocolate products contain lead or cadmium at levels in which one serving exceeds the California safe harbor level for reproductive harm. And all they want is these companies to label their product. But you said companies do test from time to time to see where they stand with these things, or is that not routine?
I can't speak for other companies.
Sure.
But it's something that most chocolate people are aware of because, you know, we're using, you know, like much like a potato farmer is taking a potato out of the earth that will absorb whatever is in the earth. So a cocoa bean is growing, you know, in an environment where it will absorb nutrients and minerals from the soil. So, we have to watch these things carefully. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a piece of analysis that's done every week, but it's more, you know, it's more periodic. I was talking to one of the cocoa producers in Peru last year, and they said they systematically test every batch. And they've got a measure that they are measuring against, which I, I think is the World Health Organization level. I could be wrong about that, but it's a reasonable standard to take. And if they've got a batch of cocoa beans that is over that limit, then they abandon the batch. They will use those beans. That's a great and responsible attitude. Now, is everybody doing that? No.
No.
That's one of the biggest producers in Peru, and firstly, I was impressed that they were aware of it, that they were testing for it, analyzing every batch. That was great.
Now, let's get back to your delicious Pascha chocolate. Now, one of the things that you don't have is soy lecithin. You don't have any soy in your chocolate because it is an allergen. And I was recently reading about Hershey's, how they're not importing Cadbury made in Britain anymore, and the Hershey's version of Cadbury is different than the British form of Cadbury, and the Hershey's form uses more sugar and different emulsifiers, and we often see soy lecithin as an emulsifier. I understand it helps shelf life and whatever. How did you do that? And
well, the shelf life is one thing. The real big thing you're trying to do in chocolate is manage what we call the viscosity, which, if you like, is the flowability of the chocolate. You've got this chocolate mass that you have made, and it's warm and it's molten and it's flowing or flowable. You need to deposit that and do things with it before it cools and hardens. Because once it's cooled and hardened, you can't, get into the bar or the shape of the bunny or the egg or whatever it is you're trying to make. So we have to manage the viscosity or the flowability. And soy lecithin, or any lecithin really, is wonderful for doing that, because just a tiny amount of that emulsifier enhances the ability of that product to flow. So as an industrial ingredient, when you're making chocolate on a very large scale, it becomes terribly important to use that, because if you're making tens or hundreds of tons in a batch, and it doesn't flow properly, you've got a huge problem, a huge mess. So it's systematically used in large scale production. Now, there's a way of getting around it, because you can simply increase the fat content, the what we call the cocoa butter, which is the fat part of the cocoa bean. You increase that content within the chocolate mixture, and there's roughly a 10% ratio, 10-to-1 ratio between emulsifier and cocoa butter. So, in other words, if you're using 1% of an emulsifier, it's like using 10% or having an additional 10%. Of cocoa butter in your product. Well, guess what? The emulsifier, the soy lecithin, is way cheaper than using 10% of cocoa butter. Now, increasing the fat content may not sound like the best thing to do for health, but actually the cocoa butter fat content is primarily oleic acid. It's a very healthy form of fat. This is not, there's lots of omega 6 and healthy fats within that. So that's, from a health perspective, that's not a worry. It's really from a cost perspective that the bigger companies don't want to do that. Now, when you're at a small scale like we are, it's much more important, as you said, to avoid the allergens, but also the making a smaller batch and using a smaller amount. It's less of an impact on us financially to do that, and easier for us to take the higher stance. Now, if I was producing thousands of tons of a week or a day in a huge plant, I would understand a different argument. But at our, where we are as a company, what we're trying to do, it makes no sense to do anything different.
Well, bigger is not always better.
No, it's not. I think the whole world is just beginning to realize that this whole huge industrialization wave of the last 100 years, it's really caused some problems.
I'm really starting to dislike the word efficient more and more.
Absolutely.
The cost of efficiency is so overwhelmingly high, maybe not in terms of dollars, but in terms of our health and the environment and the economy and people's welfare.
Absolutely. Think of the exponentially growing healthcare costs. If we all were able to take greater responsibility and control of our health, and if we could all actually, trust the health and rely on a healthier set of ingredients from these large, huge industrial food companies, then, the nation's health bill wouldn't be nearly as bad. There's a huge cost. It's just a question of who bears it.
Well, Simon, I am so glad that Pascha Allergen-Free Organic Dark Chocolate is here for us to enjoy. I'm glad you're small, although I would love everyone to be able to enjoy your chocolate. So maybe more little Pashas will pop up everywhere.
Exactly. Maybe it's more. Maybe we can get just a little bigger, and that'll be just enough.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you have a chocolate chip. I love making cookies, and I have a niece who has celiac disease, and every time I would look in the stores for a chocolate that I could be convinced didn't have any wheat or any bit of it, it just didn't exist.
Yeah.
But you've got it.
Well, we do, and we're very happy with our products. We just need to sort of get them out there, make them available to people, and show them that, small is beautiful and small is better.
Great. Well, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I like to say that every food has a story, and chocolate has a story, and Pascha chocolate is a beautiful story. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. That was Simon Lester, and please visit PaschaChocolate.com. That's P-A-S-C-H-A chocolate.com. It's well worth it. I've tried it. It's delicious. It's a little pricier, but you're not paying for child slavery. You're not getting the allergens if you're concerned about that. And if you want a truly dairy-free chocolate, this is it. This is the only one. And if you know of any more, please let me know at info@realmeals.org. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with a plant-based doctor.